I'd like to thank today's sponsors of the Wellness Way podcast, London Nootropics. London Nootropics adaptogenic coffee blends are designed to help you stay balanced and elevate your day. They give you all the benefits of regular coffee, but they minimise the side effects such as the jitters, anxiety and that well-known crash. Lovingly made with the highest quality medicinal mushroom extracts and other adaptogens. Each blend is designed for a specific purpose. Flow for mental clarity and focus, Zen to alleviate stress and anxiety, and Mojo for that natural boost. You can read more about their blends and the adaptogens they contain on their website, londonnootropics.com. And if you'd like to learn more about their blends and their astonishing journey, why don't you go and check out our podcast episode together, where you can learn more about the boys from London Nootropics. And don't forget to use my exclusive discount, Philly20, for your 20% off. Cheers, London Nootropics. Enjoy the rest of the show.
The message of, you know, going back to the Stone Age or avoiding all technology is not even feasible these days that much. You can go live in the woods, avoid all EMF emissions from cell towers and such. But if you want to live in society and also stay up to date with the technologies that are current, including, you know, with my own child, this 5-year-old, I have no intention of completely banning all sorts of devices, because it's going to create the situation where he's going to almost be, you know, unable to communicate with people or do things that nowadays sometimes are required in jobs. So I think it's part of life, but there are much safer way to use all of these devices compared to what the average person does with them. And the radio frequency radiation range that connects our computers, cell phone, tablets, cell phone towers, smart meters. Now we have satellites, we have Bluetooth earbuds that everyone uses. And all of these are examples of sources of radio frequency radiation. For the wider public, do not even produce anything with cords anymore. So it just shows you that, you know, all of humanity is moving in this direction of more and more EMF emissions, even though the science is showing more and more evidence of harm.
Hello, lovely people. And this is an episode on the Wellness Way that I really should have done a long time ago. This is one of the most important things, I think, to our health. And it's something that isn't really talked about a lot. And it really should be. Over the last 4 years, we've learned a lot about 5G. And I think there have been a lot of discussions going on about it. You know, this has been done so we can have a movie 1 second faster. But what's it doing to our health? So today I want to bring on a really great guy, the EMF guy, Nick Pinot. He is a citizen journalist and an author of, I'm just going to read this out, Nick, The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs. I absolutely love that, because it is not a tinfoil conspiracy theory. And a lot of people think it is, like, oh, another conspiracy theory from the Philly JLA camp, but it's not. There's a lot of very solid data on here, and we're going to talk about that later. So Nick, welcome to the Wellness Way. Thank you so much for being here, my love.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really what got me started is the frustration that I encountered when I started studying the topic and realized that a lot of people that, you know, were very intelligent and commenting on the topic really were completely convinced that this is a not serious topic. And maybe part of it is on purpose by the industry because it's convenient to do so. But then there's also, I guess, a large fraction of them that somehow do not want this to be true, because it's super inconvenient when you learn that your everyday devices are not as safe as the health authorities or regulatory agencies make it appear.
The Wellness Way presents Barbara O'Neill. Barbara is coming to talk in London June the 11th, 2024. Go to phillyjlay.com to secure your tickets now. We'll see you there.
Well, that's a very interesting point there, because they do make it appear very safe. You know, otherwise, obviously, we wouldn't be using them. And it's virtually, I'd say it's virtually impossible in this day and age to ask people to give up their devices. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, to completely give up, I don't even think, you know, when I get on podcasts, if that would be my primary message, people would not even invite me on podcasts, right? Because it's, you know, the message of, you know, going back to the Stone Age or avoiding all technology is not even feasible these days that much. You can go live in the woods, avoid all EMF emissions from cell towers and such. But if you want to live in society and also stay up to date with the technologies that are current, including, you know, with my own child, he's 5-year-old, I have no intention of completely banning all sorts of devices, because it's going to create the situation where he's going to almost be, you know, unable to communicate with people or do things that nowadays sometimes are required in jobs. So I think it's part of life, but there are much safer way to use all of these devices compared to what the average person does with them.
Okay, so let's start at the very beginning here. What is an EMF?
Sure. We're talking about electromagnetic fields or the electromagnetic spectrum. There's many things on that spectrum. There's you know, many different types of emissions in the higher range that we know are dangerous or that can have some purpose medically speaking, such as X-rays, for example. We know that X-rays can be useful for diagnostic purposes, but also just a few decades ago, we started greatly reducing our exposure to X-rays because we realized that every X-ray that you get, every scan that you get will increase your future risks of cancer. So there is, you know, there has to be a reason why you get an X-ray. And most doctors, even the most conventional ones, tend to err on the safe side of things. So if there is no use to get an X-ray, don't get it. But there's also exposures that we previously thought were not dangerous, but we realized they impact human health. One of them is, you know, the light emitted by screens. That's also an EMF. Previously, a lot of people thought, well, it's just light, right? It's just a screen. There's nothing really special about it. Now we realize that, especially when you are exposed for days on end, there are consequences to your eye health, for example. And then if you are exposed at the wrong time of the day, there are consequences on your sleep and circadian rhythm that will give you certain hormones in the morning and certain hormones at night and just help you feel great and energetic during the day and then sleepy at night when you should, instead of insomniac. And we know this is disrupted by the fact that we have these EMF emissions that give the wrong light information to our eyes and also our skin. And this is very well established. What is more controversial and where people really think this is all tinfoil hatter stuff is these invisible EMFs that are lower than what our eye can see. So therefore, they're invisible, but there are still health impacts. And I'm talking about the EMF in the radio frequency radiation range that connects our computers, cell phone tablets, cell phone towers, smart meters. Now we have satellites, we have Bluetooth earbuds that everyone uses. And all of these are examples of sources of radio frequency radiation. So there's an incredible amount of exposure that we've added to our daily dose, if you will, just in the last decade or the last 2 decades in that specific range. And more science is showing that there are detriments to these exposures, even though, you know, even if the average angry person on the internet doesn't want it to be the case, the science is very convincing at this point.
Sorry to interrupt this podcast. The Wellness Way has got a brand new interactive ebook out. I've created a beginner's guide to your natural health systems to help you navigate through the jungle of natural health. A banquet of knowledge wrapped up in a simple ebook, featuring some of my top guests from the podcast. As an added bonus, I've even thrown in my meditation album, The Wellness Awakening, From Past Lives to Passing. Head over to my webpage, phillyjlay.com, to grab your copy now. And while you're there, why don't you sign up for my newsletter? And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast so we can continue to get this information out. Remember, the doctor of your future is you.
So I want to talk about the science a little bit here because, you know, with all of these kind of, you know, whether it's EMFs, whether it's, you know, medicine, whatever it is, the science is paid for normally by the people who are benefiting from its use, which is a very dangerous place for us to be in. But we know that that happens in medicine. We know that that happens in farming. We know that happens with, you know, agrochemicals. And, you know, this is also very much the case with EMFs. Now, what happens if scientists start talking about the detrimental effects on health? What happens to those scientific research papers?
Well, scientists that at the beginning, I think that the industry had a real incentive to study cell phone radiation in a way that was legit. And whether they wanted these results to be displayed in front of the public if they were negative, if they found negative impact, is another question. The answer is probably no. They didn't want these results to come out because starting in the 80s and 90s, when the first cell phones were put on the market, they hired scientists and then quickly fired them or defunded their efforts when effects were found. So that's the early Nokia studies. And then there's, if I recall correctly, Robert C. Kane, and there was Henry Lai also that was systematically defunded by the industry when results went against the industry. So again, it's just a classic corporate playbook. And at one point we had, in the US, at least in North America, especially in the US, we had a lot of money being poured into this research, but through lobbying efforts, activists have found that, you know, through the 90s and early 2000s, finally, the lobbying efforts really were fruitful. And all the programs that were there to find possible effects from these EMFs were systematically defunded. A few weeks ago, all research ended in the US, for the moment, at least. We have $0 going into EMF research in the US as of a few weeks ago. And that's, there was supposed to do a lot of follow-up studies and scientific inquiries after the National Toxicology Program found that radio frequency radiation is what they call, you know, a definite carcinogen. The highest level of proof that they could determine was through that study. And it was published in 2018, and they were supposed to do follow-up studies. We don't know exactly what happened with that, but now they announced that they're going to stop the program a little bit out of nowhere, I must say. So at this point, the only researchers that are researching this topic are either universities that are outside North America, including Iran, including Spain. There's good researchers also in China, in Russia. And I mean, it's really a topic that is studied in every nation, regardless of the politics of the moment, or even, you know, scientists that are Chinese share with Americans, Europeans, and Russians. So I mentioned that. That's important to understand the context around that. The best science that was ever done, it comes from Russia, especially because they have everything that was published in the Eastern Blocs in the time of the Soviet Union. And they were very, very interested in EMF safety, whereas the Americans were not, for strategic reasons.
Yeah, no, I remember... Well, I remember when Gorbachev came into power, and one of the negotiations, obviously, you know, part of it was uniting Germany, was why they made links between the West and Russia. But one of the negotiations was actually allowing microwaves into Russia, because Russia has always been really, really strict on EMFs. So they didn't allow microwaves. You know, I mean, Putin gets a lot of flack, and that's not what this podcast is about today. However, he doesn't allow Wi-Fi in public places any more than he allows glyphosate to be sprayed on the crops, you know, and the Russian government actually pay farmers to grow organically. And in the same way, he doesn't allow Wi-Fi in public places. Now, I remember having an argument with my ex-husband about that. He said, of course he doesn't, for God's sake, it's a communist country and he doesn't want anybody to have any freedom of information. I'm going, no, they're allowed their, you know, their Wi-Fi at home. They're allowed the internet, but just, you know, not in public places. And we've seen this massive surge towards these radiation towers on shopping centers, on schools, which absolutely breaks my heart. You know, and schools, you know, because they're all short of funding, they take money from telecom companies to put these massive towers up. You know, at my daughter's school, there were, you know, children were, you know, testing positive for cancer. And you have to go, oh my God, you know, they're sitting under these cell towers all day long, you know, 5 days a week, all term time. And then we wonder why our kids are sick. So Russia has always been, you know, really, really strict on stuff like this. The research coming out of Russia, you know, obviously the West and Russia isn't getting on swimmingly well at the moment. So, you know, is any of it trickling over to the West? You know, is anybody talking about these research papers?
Yeah, there's still active scientists that are collaborating internationally. So I don't know how much, you know, the politics of the moment prevent them from sharing things. But, you know, the head of the equivalent of the Federal Communication Commission in Russia is, in my view, one of the best scientists in the world. And when it comes to this topic, and there's no denying that there are health impacts, you know, what they're sharing in other countries, including the head of the oldest medical establishment in the world, which is in India, or the Indian, I think it's the equivalent of the Indian health department, said, you know, staying near a cell tower is very dangerous. And it looks like in other countries besides Canada and maybe, you know, part of the most Western nations, the scientists and medical doctors are kind of feel more free to discuss these things, probably because they have a better independence in what they can say. And probably the lobbying efforts are not as aggressive. So you actually have people who can object these technologies. And for sure, imagine if someone in the US, if the US Surgeon General went out and said, you know, cell phone towers are very dangerous. Imagine that. Imagine what the repercussions on the PR when it comes to Verizon and AT&T and you know, Sprint and operators in the US. It's a nightmare. And it is arguably the most lucrative industry in the world. It is, in fact, the telecom industry plus big tech are larger than big pharma. So there's no reason to think that their lobbying efforts would be less than big pharma. In fact, there's many reasons to think they are more aggressive and they have more funding compared to big pharma to make this happen. So it's part of the reason why I think what we're seeing in the scientific literature is really a systematic effort to slow things down as much as possible, just like big tobacco did. So we have, and even with that in mind, it's not working as well as they intended, because it is a topic that I think is studied internationally, because every citizen in India and every citizen in the US and every citizen in Spain and in Russia is exposed to cell phones. So therefore, you have local scientists from India and from all sorts of research groups that end up publishing on the topic, and it's becoming very hard to, you know, stop them, because the lobbying efforts in the US are not necessarily hindering the efforts in Iran or from Spanish researchers, or so I do see that the science has evolved, and now we have not only the International Agency for Research on Cancer, that is a sub-branch of the WHO, so not necessarily the one I would trust the most. However, it had convened a working group that was multidisciplinary back in 2011, and they did find that radiofrequency radiation was a class 2B carcinogen. They said, we don't have enough animal data, and this is why it's not a 2A, which is a probable carcinogen, or a class 1, which is a definite carcinogen. So we already had this data almost 15 years ago that, well, okay, it might be a carcinogen, and I guess that's something. It's the lowest level of, you know, of certainty around the topic. But in 2018, we had these major animal studies, like I said, and one of them was in Italy from the Ramazzini Institute, and the other one was the National Toxicology Program in the US. And with that, scientists that have been studying the topic since that 2011 decision said, now we have enough data to reclassify this agent as class one carcinogen, a definite carcinogen next to asbestos and tobacco smoke. And these papers still exist. They're published, and I keep citing them to anyone who wants to listen. But that's from 2018. And to this day, I don't see anyone, you know, being angry at it. But we have a class one carcinogen that we keep using. And what has been done since 2018, you mentioned 5G. That's one of the new technologies that we are facing now, with more towers, more radiation closer to people's homes than ever before. One thing we've done that is exactly backwards of where humanity should be heading in that topic is that we've been increasing the number of towers. We've been increasing how close we put these emissions to our bodies, including now Bluetooth earbuds or headphones that were not that popular 6 years ago. Now they're very, very popular. In fact, most manufacturers of headphones and earbuds that are, you know, for the wider public do not even produce anything with cords anymore. So it just shows you that, you know, all of humanity is moving in this direction of more and more EMF emissions, even though the science is showing more and more evidence of harm. So it's very bizarre at the moment. And the message from the industry and from regulatory agencies is that everything is safe. There is nothing to see here. And that's basically the line from Health Canada, also where I live, at the moment. And if you ask other countries, including in the UK, Australia, and many of the Western nations, they would say, you know, a spinoff on that message where, oh, there's basically nothing to see here.
Okay, it's interesting you use that phrase, there's nothing to see here. And I think that's the problem. There's nothing to see here. There's a wonderful book that I've mentioned before on this podcast with the beautiful Cultivate Elevate called The Invisible Rainbow.
Yep.
And we have these frequencies because we're made up of electricity. We're electric beings. And so we have our own field, and we have this invisible rainbow that penetrates that field. But because it's invisible, and you say there's nothing to see here, everybody thinks it's okay. Whereas when you see, you know, when you see the chemicals sprayed onto crops, you know, and I've posted so many photographs of, you know, glyphosate and the great big helicopters going down and everybody in their Hamas suits and, you know, kind of going along and spraying it. And, you know, you cigarettes, you know, you can actually see the smoke and see it swirling in the air. But with EMFs, there is nothing to see here. And I think that's why people don't take it as seriously as they should. But with the status as it has as a carcinogen, you know, that does put it up with, you mentioned there, asbestos. Well, you know, I when I did up my home, I had a bit of asbestos in my home, and it was a tiny, tiny amount. And I had to get a special agency out. I had to pay 20 grand, and they all turned up in hammer suits. And it was like 2 inches behind an electrical socket was all they found, because you have to have a survey done when you're renovating a 1970s building. You know, the effort and the money that went into removing that bit of asbestos. Now, I'm not saying that that's wrong. Obviously, that needs to be done. But we have this technology with all this research. But because you can't see it, nobody gives a shit. They just don't. I really think they don't think it happens. I mean, I've got young girl. Well, not young, you know, 20, 23 girls. They've got bloody AirPods in that their father gave them for Christmas. And I'm going, why would you do that? You know, why would you buy them and why would you wear them? And they're going, they're fine. They're absolutely fine. And I'm going, you know, how do we get it through to the young generation that have got these AirPods in, who have got their phones in their pockets on their jeans? And, you know, what can we do to actually explain to them how dangerous this is?
It's it's a very tough question, especially for the younger generation. It really goes against everything they've learned, and they keep, you know, being taught that everything is fine and everything is safe. I think educating the younger generation first about the impact on sleep, at least, could be a thing that, might become popular or might become, you know, common knowledge. But that's a start. As far as, you know, earbuds, and we're going to have to create safer products. In reality, it shouldn't be up to citizens to protect themselves against products like that. The design of these cell phones and earbuds and everything could be different in a way where the user could be shielded at least as much as possible against these emissions, and maybe they would go towards the exterior. But to this day, you know, there's not a single company I'm aware of that does any type of shielding against these emissions, because everything is within those completely obsolete and inappropriate safety guidelines. So what can you do? Really, they don't even ask their engineers to lower emissions while maximizing Wow. the quality of the product, right? So at the moment, really, how the industry operates is anything goes. In fact, not only could the power of cell phones go way down with the same degree of connectivity, but also the cell phone towers, many engineers told me that you could reduce how much they emit and it would still connect fine. It wouldn't change the technology whatsoever. And why they don't do it is that the competitor doesn't do it. So it's a question of, well, we're just going to keep the power output to the maximum possible, instead of saying, well, we should do the minimum possible because of health, but they're not required to do so. So at the moment, I think, you know, a change of habit in our youth is all we can hope for. And of course, if you have younger children, it's up to you as parents to try your best to reduce their exposure. One of the way you can do it easily is, you know, by pre-downloading content on any tablet or cell phone. And then when you hand a device to the kid, it's not on wireless. It's on airplane mode and it's not emitting anything. So that's one way to do it, including, you know, we have a trip this summer. We're going to go to the beach, and I think we have a good 12-hour drive. I'm going to pre-download movies instead of, you know, I don't know, putting like a 4G LTE chip in there and having it streamed and it's on the kid for 12 hours. And yet that's how most parents would do it. Not because they're, you know, I don't want to blame them for anything, just because they think it's the way the technology is built. Oh, we're just going to connect to the internet and stream it, which can work. It does work, but it has consequences.
It has consequences, but the problem is that so many people are ignorant of this because it's not talked about, you know, and if the companies aren't going to lower the levels themselves, then it has got to come down. Now, I hate saying got to come down to governments, because I bloody hate governments, all governments, and they're paid for and they're bought for, and we all know that. But it's somebody has got to do something to knock this level down. And, you know, that's a really good point, because you go on an aeroplane where your tablet, your computer, phone, whatever's on aeroplane mode. So everybody, you know, I remember my kids, you know, when we were a bit younger and go on, you know, on a flight, and they download everything they wanted to watch before the flight. So it's down to parents to say, okay, we're going on a car journey. You've got to download it because I'm not letting you have Wi-Fi. I mean, it's really got to come down to be that simple. Now, we talked about AirPods. Now they do fry your brain. There's a lot of evidence now that radiation, EMFs, can actually cross the blood-brain barrier, can't it? There seems to be.
Yes, it's not a crossing of the blood-brain barrier, but it's a weakening. So what is crossing after that is molecules that you do not want in your brain can cross over, such as chemicals. So in fact, there some scientists think that the reason we see certain health effects from EMS might be because of this opening of the blood-brain barrier. And this is not new data. In fact, the first impact of that have been found in radar operators in the 1970s in military research. And we don't know what are initially the clinical implications of that, but that might be linked to why we see an increasing amount of data linking radio frequency radiation and dementia or Alzheimer's. And not all scientists agree on that link, but I think it's plausible, or a reduction in brain health, or an increase in depression or anxiety or fatigue. Part of it might be because of the effects on the brain, including a weakening of the blood-brain barrier. But this line of research, we don't have a lot of follow-up studies in the last several years about that. So it's just a concerning thing in the back of my mind. We have other lines of evidence that are, in my mind, even more urgent to talk about because they're more convincing. One of them is keeping a phone in the pocket. And that's very unfortunate because, of course, children nowadays, including my son, it will be a very difficult battle for me to, if he ever has a smartphone, and he will at a certain age, how do you communicate? Okay, well, if it's in your pocket, put it on airplane mode. Please remember to do it, right? I can only wish that he's going to develop this habit because we know that radiation can impair fertility and also testosterone production. So what is the consequence of doing that in young men and even in young women? Of course, and the women, same risks apply to hormonal production. Fertility risks for women are harder to study, but they are more permanent because you don't renew your sperm count every 60 days or so. You just get one set of eggs that can be negatively impacted by this oxidative stress. So we don't know what the consequences are in our youth, but it's really what is the most aggravating. The studies are very, very convincing that you will have negative effects on your fertility if you keep it in your pocket. And yet, I don't see any warning labels on these things, right? They should be engineered in a way where if the phone is near your body, it will turn off radiation. That would be a simple engineering fix that, they could roll this out next week on all devices worldwide. And then people will be like, well, my phone isn't ringing anymore. Well, now if it's close to your body, there's no radiation. So you gotta figure out other ways to bring it, maybe taking it in your hand, or maybe have it at least on a belt hoister or a bag, these are ways that you can right away reduce your exposure from these devices by not keeping it in your pocket or hitting airplane mode. So that's a very important line of research that I have to mention. And another one that is, I think, in a sense, more concerning because we simply don't know what the implications are, but there's been several large epidemiology studies in the last decades about pregnant moms that are exposed to a phone and then the risks of their children developing ADD, ADHD-like symptoms, or even food intolerance. And we see a strong correlation there, and so much so that Dr. Yu Taylor at Yale, who's a very esteemed scientist there and still publishing, somehow he's still publishing. I don't know exactly if he got flack because of that, but he seems to still be in this position to this day and still fighting the good fight. And he said there's causality there. In his mind, there's no denying that the more you expose yourself while you're pregnant to this radiation, and the greater the risks to your children developing ADD, ADHD. So why is that? Well, we don't know. Is it because the blood-brain barrier opening in your fetus? Is it because it's impairing immune system maturation? We don't have the exact mechanism. All we have is a correlation that is strong enough for the scientists to say it is causal, but it is concerning because even to this day, most moms that are, that are creating a baby inside of them are not thought to try their best to minimize how much they expose the phone very close to the abdomen, which could be, a basic health recommendation. Just like it's not like we have to ban devices for pregnant moms. And I'm not, one for initially having the government be this intervention, like doing these kind of neurotic intervention, like, no, you can't do that. But
because they're very good at doing neurotic interventions, the governments of the world, especially your government in Canada.
Well, exactly. And I saw it firsthand, in the last years. That's all I say. And I see the slippery slope of telling people what to do and forcing them, but informing the public. It's kind of basic, right? Pregnant moms know to be worried about cannabis exposure, especially now it's legal. In Montreal, we have cannabis shops everywhere, but yet for pregnancy, it's kind of dodgy. Alcohol, chemicals, certain pharmaceutical drugs, and why not add cell phone radiation in the mix and just say, look, you can do all you want, but know that there are these studies in if you do want to minimize your radiation exposure, here's how you can do so. And one of the ways is not to put a laptop on your belly, even though it becomes a shelf at one point. I saw it in my wife, you know, and it can kind of be a good position to use your computer, and maybe even more comfortable than using it on a desk. But the reality is that these exposures are too close to the abdomen, so they come with these risks.
It is very, very concerning because, you know, we're seeing it ramp up like nothing on earth, and they're already talking about the next generation of Wi-Fi and the next generation of Wi-Fi. And, you know, where is this going to go? But let's go back to the very, very beginning. And I want to go back to the Spanish flu, actually, you know, which did not start in Spain, but it started in America around the time that radio, you know, your radio started, and we had those first frequencies. You know, there were also some injections going on around that time as well. You know, there were a couple of little correlations that went on, but, you know, maybe that's why, you know, we had the Spanish flu. Maybe the wireless was, you know, a contributor in the same way that we had, you know, a lot of stuff with COVID about, you know, kind of long COVID and, you know, people having the loss of smell and taste. And, you know, again, we were in the UK beginning to roll out the 5G, and they never closed down construction work in the UK. I don't know if they did in Canada or America, but over here they
Not
didn't
really.
Close down. No, it was allowed to go on. And I used to drive to London every other week to pick up my daughters to come and spend the next week with me. And I'd drive in on the M4, and they were digging up the M4. They're all next to each other, working away, and they're running all this cabling. And I thought, yeah, you know, that's why they haven't closed down construction, because they're getting all the 5G cabling in while they've got everybody off the streets. So we're not seeing it. But maybe that is a little bit of a tin hat conspiracy theorist. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, well, you know, some people have made that link. And, you know, I think some people were censored online for no reason. I even saw, you know, popular actors, A-list celebrities in the U.S. And they said things. I think it might have been John Cusack who said he almost got his Instagram banned, I think, because he said something like, well, those 5G towers, I don't think they're any healthy. Something like very... like very obvious for almost any citizen, and it was like super controversial. It's not something controversial to say, look, in other countries, even city officials and doctors agree that cell towers too close to the body is nothing good, and that some people feel sick when exposed to them. So it's just, I think, where people have you know, advanced certain ideas that were speculative in their nature, and they got some flack for it. But I think, you know, the entire era of the last 4 years was completely crazy online. And sometimes I did not agree with the amount of speculation that was inserted in there. But at the same time, if we just look at radio frequency radiation and immune system, and we talk specifically about this, well, there are sufficient studies to say there might be consequences of the immune system if you get overexposed to this radiation. And what does overexposure mean? Well, it's probably everyone is overexposed in reality to doses that are comparable to what we can find in scientific studies that might impair the immune system. So, and do we have correlations between where people live, how much they are exposed to this electrosmog, if you will, and then their risks of developing diseases that are transmissible or dying from any cause? Yes. And that's called, I guess we could also make the argument for air pollution as well. We can make many arguments that are like these factors in cities that are more stressful compared to if you live outside a city. So it becomes difficult to find causality because, like, what are we seeing? We're seeing more people have poorer health and more premature death inside of cities. Okay, what has changed, right? It might be chemicals, that's true, but what is the most often ignored line of research is radio frequency radiation. Because yes, with the advent of 5G, the levels of this electro pollution has gone way up, and we have many different engineering scientific papers that prove that when you install 5G in a city, there are many areas that become much higher in electro smog. It's not surprising. The technology is, again, very permissive, so very high power. It's not true that 5G is lower power than 4G, even though the industry keeps repeating that somehow. They said, oh, it's small cells technology and whatever that means, because it's, you know, it's completely meaningless. Essentially, they're the same as 4G LTE towers and the 3G we had previously, but they're installed next to the 4G antennas, not as a replacement. So we're just adding more and more and more problems. And then with 5G, we've generally are seeing more and more people that complain about those towers because they're very close to their bedrooms or their office spaces. And there's now 8 different case studies that have been published in peer-reviewed journals by Professor Lennart Hardell and Mona Nilsson from Sweden. And these 8 case studies make the case that when people are healthy, they get exposed to a new 5G install, and within a few weeks, sometimes their health can crumble. And what they measure and what they determine in these case studies, that is, in fact, I guess a good news in a way, is that when these people change offices or change homes, move away, they feel better and they see these symptoms getting resolved. And that's not in all situations, but it just shows you, you know, it's not that complicated, people. It's you live near the river and you drink in the river, and a polluter puts something that is toxic in the river and you become sick. And once you become sick, you realize that the river is the source of illness. And then you stop drinking from the river and you feel better. So in some cases, you see these exposures that can be directly linked with someone that just has sees their health deteriorating in a way that they're literally getting poisoned within a few weeks. And I don't always talk about these cases because, let's face it, it's very inconvenient to hear about cell towers because you cannot instantly decide to turn them off. Right, with your phone, you can decide to change your habits, not put it in a pocket, and maybe pre-download content on the tablet, and that's all well. And these matter. But for towers, it's a little bit trickier because some people see the tower and they say, okay, well, you know, am I getting sick because of the towers? We don't know. But a 2022 review I talked about recently by Balmori showed that 75% of studies around cell towers and health showed negative effects. So if you look at the scientific literature and you ask, okay, do cell towers harm people? The answer is kind of an obvious yes, there are health detriments. And again, that wouldn't be the same, you know, the same message you would hear from any health authority in the Western nations, or almost. And then you have, you know, in certain situations, you have government that decide to take a more precautionary approach. I must say, France is pretty good on it, and India is even better than US and Canada. And in many cases, they have moved away cell phone towers where the measured levels were too high compared to their standards. But in these countries, including Italy, I must mention, these allowable limits of EMFs are much lower, which makes it difficult to roll out 5G in the first place because they have to be strategic about placement. And then if someone takes measurements independently and sends that to the government, there might be action taken against telecoms, and they have the right to remove the antennas and then move them away. So it's a battle between telecoms that want to put more and more towers and have better coverage, and citizens that say, no, I don't want to be overexposed, right? And it's a tricky situation. A lot of people listening to this would say, I love good coverage, but I hate the towers. So it's a bit ironic there, right? Yeah. We want good coverage. We don't want a tower. No, I want others to be exposed to the tower. So it is tricky. But in the end, looking at approaches from other countries, there are much safer ways to roll out these towers, including never putting it right where people live, right? It shouldn't be within, you know, an arm's length or something crazy, of course. It should never be put on buildings where people live, where they might be under the tower and be exposed really close to it. These situations happen all the time and they need to be stopped, because these case studies really show that some citizens are put at great risk just because of one day the owner of the building said, oh yes, I'll accept your bribe for $30,000 per month, sometimes, that they might be getting for, wow, you know, renting their roof space, but to great consequence to either people that live underneath it or maybe on the next building that is exactly on the other side, you know, but fairly close to it in large cities.
The Wellness Way presents Barbara O'Neill. Barbara is coming to talk in London June the 11th, 2024. Go to phillyjlay.com to secure your tickets now. We'll see you there.
My daughters live in London, and I've seen over the last few years as well, the 4 years really since 2020, all these new street lights go up, which, you know, are LED, very toxic for our health. And somebody sent me a video, and I can't verify it, this is speculation on my part, that when they opened one of these street lights, there's actually 5G put in those as well to kind of link them all up together. And I just, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but I know that a lot of friends of mine have sent me photographs where they've had little mini 5G towers go outside their flats. And, you know, they just kind of put them up willy-nilly all over the road. And you have this problem in an area like London, in a built-up city, where, you know, when I go visit my kids, I turn my phone on to get their Wi-Fi, and 20 other Wi-Fis come up from, you know, nearby. And we're going to come on now to the fact that, you know, this Wi-Fi world that we live in, we can disconnect ourselves, we can turn off our Wi-Fi. But unless everybody's doing it, it doesn't really help, because you're getting all the Wi-Fi from all the people that are around you. So can you give us any suggestions of anything anybody can do in those kind of built up areas where that's happening?
Sure. Well, I actually don't agree with what you said. If you turn off your own Wi-Fi, it would make a difference. Although, of course, it makes a smaller difference the more that you are in a city in a very densely polluted area on an electrosmog standpoint. But even with that in mind, especially if you are, let's say, I just think about Paris. I don't remember how large the flats are in London, but if you're in a small apartment and your Wi-Fi router is very close to where you actually spend time, then your own Wi-Fi router might be more problematic than neighbors' Wi-Fi routers. So of course you cannot at the moment, you know, knock at your neighbor's door and tell them what to do. You're going to turn off your Wi-Fi, right? You're irradiating me, but you can turn off your own, and you should, especially at night. So that's one way that you can minimize exposure. And if you see, you know, 300 different Wi-Fis on your list, it just shows that your computer is able to pick up a Wi-Fi router, but it might be true for any Wi-Fi router that is within a few miles. So in fact, you know, the range, it doesn't mean that the intensity is there. It just means that it's able to detect it. But of course, all of those have biological effects, but there's good reasons to think that those that are closer to your body are more dangerous in a sense. So it's all, I guess, a story of minimization. Right. If we replace electro pollution with air pollution, the story of minimization, or, you know, minimization of toxins, is pretty easy in a lot of people's mind. It's OK, well, first, you cannot eliminate all toxins. That's kind of a given. So you can either freak out about it, become neurotic, or be practical about it and do your best and, you know, buy organic where you can and try to avoid plastics and maybe clean the air with a filter or filtration system in your flat and do things like that. So for EMFs is the same. Try to mitigate the exposures that first are close to your pillow. That's what I'll say, because it there seems to be a greater impact on sleep than anything else for some people. So if you sleep next to your phone and maybe, you know, a Bluetooth-enabled alarm clock and a laptop and this and that, a lot of people have way too many devices that are emitting EMFs during their sleep. So that's not something you want. And these should be moved away from the bedroom or on airplane mode or turned off. But if you don't want to, you know, take any guess about it, just put your phone on the next room or in the corridor or wherever and charge it during the night. And that way you can still be called at night, which is a big concern of parents that have older kids. They don't want to be completely unreachable during the night, which is completely understandable. I respect that. So when it comes to your everyday exposures, another thing I'll talk about is your workstation, because a lot of people work on a computer that is connected via Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, but in reality, you can use Ethernet cables. You can use a wired connection for your computer. And that's something that is quite easy to do. You just, you know, connect a cable to your computer, to your router, especially if you're in a home office environment, it's more realistic to do it. And if you want, you can hire an IT company that does networking and have those wires be passed in the walls where it's going to be prettier and more practical. And then you have an Ethernet plug right there. And an advantage that not or benefit that a lot of people don't talk about is the fact that if you are through a wired connection, it is faster and more reliable compared to Wi-Fi, right? The Wi-Fi, the signal goes in the air, but can get disrupted by walls, especially concrete or brick walls or metal. And in certain apartments, you just don't have good coverage. I don't know what it is. Sometimes it is, you know, the length of the corridor it has to go through. And maybe you get frustrated. And you know what most people would do? And that's, I think, the wrong approach is call their IT company and say, I want a stronger Wi-Fi, right? I want five antennas that is going to blast my entire place and I'm going to have good connectivity. But if you have a cable, it goes through the cable and you have good connectivity de facto. It's very, very easy. So for me, that's exactly the situation I had in this bedroom that is also, you know, my corner office here. We have a small condo in Montreal and the connectivity of that Wi-Fi was horrible when we arrived in this place 7 years ago. And now it's very good because we have the wire that goes to our router about, you know, 25 feet this way. So that's something to be mentioned. And then, of course, the everyday behaviors we talked about when it comes to cell phones. So not talking on the ear, preferring speakerphone or wired solutions. That's one thing. The tablets, whenever they're touching your body, or laptops, when they're touching your body, they're really exposing you to higher levels. So it's really a building your set of habits that can help you minimize the toxicity over time that really matter. It's not that one phone call or one, you know, I worked on a laptop for 2 hours. Now my fertility is impaired. Well, it's not like that. It's more like I worked for 30 hours a week times a lifetime, and now maybe I face issues. So it's really think about it as something long-term, and that is hard to quantify, but easy to develop habits over time to just try to minimize the amount of radiation you're getting. And increasingly so, people that follow these simple steps tell me they sleep better, they feel better. So they didn't realize it was impacting them. But when they started reducing exposure, they finally saw that, you know, they noticed. And I think that's a common masking effect that even you get with diet. You know, some people that eat a very poor diet, a lot of processed foods would say, well, I feel fine, you know, whatever that means for you. That's your baseline. When you start cleaning it up and maybe, you know, eating fewer and fewer processed foods, you say, oh my God, in fact, my fine was kind of, you know, low quality or, you know, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. What do you think of Faraday bags and Faraday cages?
Well, Faraday bags can have they're going to completely block your cell phone signal. So that might be a practical way to not, you know, have to do any guesswork and put your phone in there during the night. That's what I'll mention, but you won't be able to receive a phone call if it works great. So that's just another way to maybe, if you don't want to hit airplane mode every time you put it in your pocket, maybe you can put it in a Faraday bag and then put it in your pocket. That's a tool that can be useful. And then some people who want to completely block external signals, Wi-Fi from neighbors or smart utility meters or cell phone towers, from coming to their bedroom, which is, you know, the place where you have the greater chances of recovery, they can install a Faraday cage over their bed. And some are made out of, you know, a mix of cotton and either copper or stainless steel or silver mesh. And so it looks like normal, you know, fabric that is see-through, pretty much like this one. This one is not, but, you know, I don't, it doesn't show that much. But anyway, it's kind of semi-transparent. And it doesn't look, you know, the prettiest thing, but you put it over your bed. Or another solution that you can install with professionals in building biology or EMF mitigation specialists is EMF blocking paint. So that way you can paint the entire room in a way that will reflect external signals. But in these rooms, you would not use your cell phone either, right? Because now you're completely blocking the exterior and you don't want to use a cell phone inside, which would have next to no signal inside, and also it would increase your exposure. So anyway, it's a decision that you can make for your home. But if you have such a shielded room, if you will, you would also decide not to use technology in your bedroom in that case.
But you can, I mean, an easy solution to this is you can paint your room and, just like you said, leave your phone outside in the hall. And so, yep, if your kids are trying to call you, or you can just, yep, get a normal old fashioned landline and have it plugged
you could
in
do
by
that.
Your bed.
Yeah.
And, yep, go, hey kids, I'm on this number at night.
Yeah. Exactly.
So there are solutions. Now, you just mentioned, you know, smart meters earlier, and I want to talk about smart meters because I have been ripping my hair out about them from the day they came into the UK. The, you know, the EMFs in there are terrible. I remember seeing, I think it was on The Truth About Cancer, actually, where they interviewed a vet who was saying that when he had started as a vet, he would see maybe 2 cases of cancer in a dog a year. That was it. And now he sees 2 a day, which is, yep, huge, absolutely huge. And he was trying to work out how this had got so out of control. And so he started doing a survey with, you know, all the owners of these pets that had cancer. And he discovered that the majority of the dogs were actually sleeping in a utility room, or, you know, some kind of room in the house where the smart meter was. And he kind of thought, okay, is there a correlation between a smart meter and the cancer levels of these pets? And he came to the conclusion, it's not a scientific research, you know, but he came to the conclusion, and he would just say to all of his clients, when they got, you know, animals, pets, puppies, whatever, really don't let them sleep near a smart meter. We've also heard recently, you know, this week, there's been quite a lot of chitter chatter in the press about the fact that smart meters aren't working. They're breaking down the whole time. They're having to be changed on a very regular basis. So all this massive push on the fact that they're better for the environment and this supposed climate you know, change that's going on, it's just like, you know, it's just like the electric car. If you're sending thousands, millions of kids down a cobalt mine every day, then, you know, and you're putting in blooming wind turbines that, you know, the concrete bases, you know, the footprint on that. If you're, I mean, I'm not, that's a whole nother episode that I'm very passionate about, but, you know, they're not really working, the smart meters, and they have consequences. And yet still people are going and getting them. What can you say to people? Because it's virtually impossible in the UK. Once you've had a smart meter installed, it is virtually impossible to find an old meter and have it reinstalled.
Yeah, it's tough. And this is the case also in many states in the US, certain cities also, because of course the US is kind of more complicated. They have different regulations at different levels. Sometimes the city won't allow it, but the state does. And it's a bit of a pure madness in the US with legislations. But when you can opt out of the smart meter program, I recommend doing so. And in certain countries, you'll get a penalty. So they make you pay for to be healthy. Go figure. Yeah, that's a bit aggravating. But some people in the end pay it. But sometimes it's $30 per month. So it compounds over a year. I mean, after 2 years, you're at $720. So it's a bit aggravating. But, you know, some people are willing to pay it. But if you cannot opt out, you can shield over that smart meter for it to to prevent these this radiation from going into your bedroom, for example. But the most concerning situations with smart meters is if you realize you're sleeping in one place and the other side of the wall, there's an entire array of smart meters. That's the worst situation possible, because it's not just one, but sometimes you might have, I mean, I've seen situations in Montreal where there must be 50 to 70 smart meters on the same wall, because it's an entire building, like with, you know, a large apartment building, of course. But imagine the person that is on the other side. And depending on the composition of the wall, sometimes it is brick, but it's not going to stop all these emissions. So you're in a situation where even if you turn off your cell phone at night, you're going to have a massive problem of radiation that for some people might lead to very poor sleep. So after a few weeks, you can imagine that this person wouldn't feel good in their bedroom. And some people don't make the link. They say, I don't know what's wrong with my health. You know, I just feel old, or I don't know, I might have caught something bad, or maybe I'm insomniac because I have anxiety over something. But, you know, and maybe all of these are true, but you forget that there's something invisible that is, you know, literally punching you in the head as you're trying to sleep. So it is a big problem. And if you're concerned about that, I would hire an EMF professional to come to your home and look at the situation with you, because the shielding solutions, such as, you know, shielding a wall or things like that, are better strategized with a professional. That's what I say, because some people try to, you know, do the work themselves, but then a professional comes in, they take reading and they realize the job wasn't properly done, and you're really walking backwards. So I think that hiring a professional is good. And in the UK, there are a few building biologists. I'll mention Beneficial Environments, Guy Hudson, that is I think he goes all over the UK, if I recall correctly. There's also EMF Protection UK, Glyn Hughes is his name, but they also have other colleagues that do mitigation in the UK. So it is possible to find it, even though I'll say that in the UK, it looks like it's more difficult to find someone compared to, let's say, the US.
Well, we will put both of those in the show notes, because it is incredibly important, you know, and if you're worried about your health, and, you know, especially if you've got babies and young children and their bedrooms are backing onto, you know, a room that, you know, my girls, you know, in London are in a block of flats, and, you know, there's a lot of them there. And it's really, I mean, it shocks me that people kind of just go and allow people actually ask for it, because they've been told that they're going to save money if they get a smart meter. And then the other thing that they do is when the smart meters don't work, they go, oh, you've got to now have pay as you go. And you've got to keep topping up your meter every week in order to have your electricity. And if you run out, you run out. I mean, it's a real pain in the ass. And yet people seem to be asking for this, and it's like, why would you? So I want to cover another couple of topics. I know we're getting close to the end, but there are a couple of other topics that are quite dear to my heart. One is when you fly. So I learned recently that when you're going through the machines at the airport, you're getting a lot of radiation on you. So a couple of flights ago, not the last flight I had, but the flight before that, I turned up and I said, I don't want to go through this. You know, I had a tumor in my throat and I don't want to put myself through this radiation. And I'm prepared to have, you know, stand here and be searched. And they wouldn't have it. And they said, we've got to get our supervisor. And the supervisor came half an hour later. And then I'm kind of looking at I don't wear a watch actually, but looking at my phone, oh God, just as bad. And kind of going, oh shit, I'm not going to get on my flight now. They said, you're going to have to go off and have a full body search. And I went, you can't do that to me. You can feel me down. You could, but I'm not having a body search. So anyway, long and short of it, I went through the bloody, you know, radar. So the last flight I went on, I turned up at the airport 3 hours early so that I could have a body search. And they didn't do it. They kind of went, I mean, they kept me hanging around for about an hour. And then they gave me this big lecture that there's nowhere near as much radiation through those machines as there is getting in an aeroplane. Now, I know an aeroplane also has radiation.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on all of this and how we can protect ourselves if we've got to get on a flight?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, what I found from the machines that are the most common I've seen in the US is that the levels of millimeter wave exposure is very low compared to a phone. But again, it's kind of comparing different types of exposures is always tricky. But if you don't go through that, and let's say you go through the little door frame instead, you get a very high magnetic field in a lower range of radiation. So these are very, very hard to compare. And then, you know, I found that these models emit relatively low level of radiation, but some people might be more, you know, more sensitive than others. And also, depending on the model of the machine in any given airport, maybe it is higher. I'm not sure at this point. So if you do get the pat down, you're probably avoiding something good. But at the same time, I find it a little bit ironic that some people get the pat down, avoid the radiation, and then jump on their phone for 3 hours. You know, so sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just that the perceived risk of the radiation machines, I think, is higher. People perceive it as like, oh, super dangerous. And then they use their phone right next to their body for 3 hours and look at Instagram and do all sorts of super high EMF activities for 3 hours and don't think twice about it. Then they get on the plane and they, you know, they look at the entertainment like everyone, like I do, but they don't think about the fact that in many airplanes, every single headrest is also a Wi-Fi transmitter. In some situation, it depends on the airline, but I've seen at least one airline where I confirmed that. And then in others, you would have very strong routers throughout the plane because now there's Wi-Fi on flights. So, you know, it is tough when you travel to avoid these exposures. One thing that you can simply do, some people do the EMF blocking clothing. And I think there's some validity to it, especially if you travel and you know you're going to get exposed to a lot of different Wi-Fi exposure and cell phones in the airport and whatnot. And on the flight itself, some people feel better using them, but there's not a lot of studies around the EMF blocking clothing. So I'd say that if you use them and you invest in those, it's more experimental. And, you know, I have to be honest about the fact that some doctors are recommending those for sensitive patients, and other doctors told me they're not really a fan. So I think it's very mixed in how they're going to be efficacious, but what I personally do is just make sure that I take certain supplements, I stay hydrated, anything, you know, that helps you recover your antioxidant status is good. There's a molecular hydrogen that is decent and I think could have benefits, like these tablets that you put in water to create hydrogen-rich water. That's one. Some people take things like glutathione or CoQ10, but you know, this is not my main area of expertise. So I try to follow what others I've found useful for jet lag. But you know, if you decide to take a plane and fly somewhere, you are not on the low EMF journey, you know. but at the same time, I want to put it into context. If you don't feel like you're personally electro hypersensitive and you decide, yes, I'm going to have benefits to visit my significant other, my family, or, you know, do a business trip that's going to help me better my career, then you are choosing to have these exposures, and that's fine. And if you understand that, you know, most of the time when you're back home, you really try to minimize your exposure, then maybe you can relax a little bit. It's like, you know, having a little bit too much ice cream during a vacation. It's not necessarily such a detriment to your health if, you know, 50 weeks out of 52, you really watch what you're eating anyway, right? So,
yeah, I think, I mean, this is really important because I've talked many times about diet because I started my healing journey with diet and nutrition.
Yeah,
and I had a lot of, you know, I couldn't eat gluten, I couldn't eat dairy, I couldn't, you know, I mean, I certainly don't eat GMOs and, you know, that shit. But I've learned to live on the 80-20 rule now. And so, you know, I don't really fly very much anymore, but I had the chance to go to India on an Ayurvedic retreat, and I've never done that. And I wanted to go up to the Himalayas and do that. So I think it did me most probably more good than the counter side of the EMFs going on the aeroplane. So, you know, I'll live on the 80-20 rule. There's one more piece of kit I want to talk to you about, because we spoke earlier about the microwave, which, you know, Gorbachev had banned. And then when Glasnost happened, part of the deal with the West was that Russia had to import loads of shit from the West, including microwaves, which fry your food. And that food continues to cook in your gut and incredibly unhealthy. But I want to talk to you about air fryers, because I get a lot of questions from people saying, what do you think about air fryers? Now, obviously, anything that's got a non-stick surface is toxic, whether it's your air fryer, whether it's your frying pan. But what do you actually think of the radiation of an air fryer? Because they're really trendy at the moment.
Yeah, well, you know, anything that is a large kitchen appliance will emit like quite a large field. These are not radio frequency radiation exposures, but they will be a magnetic field, like the same frequency that runs into the walls of your home. Like in the UK would be 50 hertz, and in North America it would be 60 hertz. So that's in the lower range frequency, but it's not that much of a problem, you know, because you generally will not wait in front of your air fryer as it's cooking, because it takes some time, you know. So these exposure will be locally around the machine within a few feet. So I wouldn't, you know, make it such a big deal. And it really depends on how often you use certain appliances. If you have something very powerful, imagine, I don't know, like sometimes it's a fan that is blowing air because maybe it's super hot in your flat, and it's very, very close to you, then maybe it's a problem if you use it like 12 to 16 hours per day. But for most kitchen appliances, people, you know, use them for a few minutes here and there. And it's not like you should necessarily worry about your smart toaster that maybe you realize now is emitting Bluetooth if you don't, you know, stare at your toast for more than a few minutes per day, you know. So it really, we have to take into consideration the time of use in that equation. So I would personally focus much more on things that you are using for hours and hours every day, such as your phone or laptop or tablet or Bluetooth things.
And Alexa, you know, yeah. So many people have got blooming Alexa in their home who's just spying on them. And, you know, Alexa, tell me this. And Alexa's connected up to the World Wide Web and having an absolute ball there in the corner of your kitchen. So that is more dangerous than your air fryer.
Yes. And, you know, Alexa and other Bluetooth technologies or Wi-Fi based technologies, in most situations, they will be emitting 24/7, even if you're not using it, including alarm clocks, including maybe that Bluetooth toaster example. But it's kind of stupid, but it exists, and most appliances are becoming Bluetooth. So these would always be looking for a signal, which is just, you know, a stupid thing to install in your home. But a lot of people don't realize that these exposures are there. So air frying wouldn't be my top concern. And then, yeah, it's personally, I own an air fryer. I love it. The nonstick, it's not good. For sure, it's not good. But then how comparable is this to frying food in bad oil? You know, don't know. I try to avoid all vegetable oils. Oil, or, yeah, you know, the canola and rapeseed.
Sunflower, rapeseed, all of those, yeah, very, very toxic, yeah, heavily processed, rancid seed oils that people,
exactly,
think are good for them. You know, and they're in,
yeah,
margarines, no, and people go, oh, it's vegan. I'm going, yeah, shit. what can you say? Have a bit of grass-fed butter, love. But, you know, that's another episode as well. Right, there are a few little things that you can do for your health, because we are surrounded by EMFs and there's nothing we can do about it at this precise moment in time. So one of my greatest hacks is get your feet on the ground. You know, keep connecting to your battery and earthing and protecting yourself as much as you can. Nick, give us a few more.
Sure. Well, I would say airplane mode at night for your phone. Turn off that Wi-Fi at night, and no Bluetooth earbuds. I'm sorry for all listeners. If you have them, you love them, use them when you're moving, and when you're stationary at your workstation, use a wired solution as well. So that way you can have both, but you can minimize those times where the, you know, the cords aren't that annoying to you. Use the wired solution as much as you can.
And you've got a conference coming up. Now, I'm sorry that we've only got a week before this podcast goes out until your conference, because I want to share it far and wide. But if you are listening to this on the day we release it, then please go to my webpage or Nick's webpage, and you're going to give us details of that now, EMF guy, because you have this conference coming up with some extraordinary experts in this field. And you can join up to this conference for free. So can you give us all the details of it? And then if people want to buy this conference, they can, and share it with their family and friends. But, you know, this is an hour, this is a podcast episode, and you really, if you're worried about your health, you need to take a deep dive. And so I would absolutely, I remember doing this conference a few years back. So Nick, over to you.
Perfect. Yes, it's the 2024 EMF Hazard Summit. This is the third time we put it together. And this time we really focus on what we call the hidden epidemic of electrosensitivity. So these are people, it could be you really listening to this, that are starting to feel bad from these exposures, whether it's loss of sleep, low energy, low libido, your mood is off, or even for some people, it goes to heart palpitations or tinnitus even might be linked with these exposures. So we put together interviews with 20 experts, including we have a presidential candidate, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is also an environmental attorney, talks about the state of the legal side of things in the US, but also environmental medicine doctors that are starting to see more and more patients come in with these complaints. I don't feel good because of the cell towers or from my own devices. I feel tingly. I feel like something is off. And not only are these doctors able to identify who is more on the sensitive side, but the good news is that they told me they're able to have them recover from these exposures and start feeling better. So it's really 20 interviews to help you navigate the science around this, but also practical tips that you can take right away and incorporate in your life to lower your EMF exposure. So it's from April 11th to the 14th.
Fantastic. And if people listen to this podcast after those dates, they can actually buy the series, can't they?
Yes, the recordings are available for purchase all year long. And from April 11th to 14th, you can watch all talks for free, five per days. And it starts at 9 a.m. Eastern, though. So if you're in the UK, you have to wait a little bit later during the day to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a conversation I've wanted to have for a very long time on The Wellness Way. And it has just been a pleasure to talk to you. And listen, guys, don't panic. Just do something about it. It's that simple, really, Nick, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, you know, as any topic, when you learn a lot, then the podcast kind of sounds like a fire hose to you. Go back and maybe take one or two things, start doing them and go from there. You know, you don't have to do everything, get everything right. Just remember that, you know, a health journey takes a long time. And even for me as the EMF guy, when I started writing my book, I was on a wireless mouse and a wireless computer and a wireless keyboard. Go figure. And then as I was writing the lines on my book, I was like, maybe I should, you know, walk my talk and get better. And nowadays I'm much more stringent on these exposures, and I occasionally I'll use Wi-Fi for different reasons, but I've learned better. And when you learn better, you do better. So just start today, you know?
Brilliant. Thank you so much, lovely people, for joining us today. It's been a great episode. I've thoroughly enjoyed everything that I've learned here, and I hope you have too. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share, because we got to get this information out, because our governments are not doing that for us. So please share it with everybody you know. And we can do this. We can change the paradigm in which we live and our health, because you always have to remember the doctor of your future is you. Thank you, guys.